Welcome to episode 148 of the Sports Geek Podcast. On this week's episode, I chat hockey, Edmonton, and giant bobbleheads with Ryan Frankson.
Welcome to the Sports Geek Podcast, the podcast built for sports digital and sports business professionals. And now, here's your host, who still plays with Legos with his friends, Sean Callanan.
Thanks, DJ Joel. Yes, I still play with Lego, and there is a plug later on for my good friend Steve Sammartino. Google Lego car when you get a chance. The people who know the story will know what I'm talking about. My name is Sean Callanan, and you are listening to the Sports Geek Podcast. You're doing that either on iTunes or Stitcher, or your favorite podcast app, or you're doing it on my favorite podcast app, Pocket Casts. I have mentioned it, I think, in the last 100 episodes. So if you haven't signed up and checked out Pocket Casts, it's well worth, I think it's the $4.99, which is effectively one cup of coffee. And it's just a better and a more pleasant podcasting experience. You can contact me via the regular ways, at Sean Callanan on most platforms, Twitter, LinkedIn, Sean Callanan Speaks on Facebook, or Sports Geek on Facebook if you want to. I want to connect with me anyway, and you can use the old-fashioned way. No, I don't mean a fax. I mean email. And you can email me with Sean at sportsgeekhq.com. I love hearing from Sports Geek podcast listeners, because then what I do is I ask them for an iTunes review, which I know you've already left. You can go to sportsgeekhq.com/iTunes to leave a review. Want to get stuck into this interview. Had a good catch-up with Ryan Frankson. Known him for a couple of years through our association with SEAT. And talked to him about his growing role with the Edmonton Oilers. And also, after having a bit of success this year, making the playoffs. So, this is my chat with Ryan Frankson. Stay tuned after this. I want to talk a little bit about Sports Geek campaigns and how we can help you drive at least $50,000 digital revenue into your team. But first, here's my chat with Ryan Frankson from the Edmonton Oilers. Very happy to welcome Ryan Frankson, the Director of Social Media and Publications for the Oilers Entertainment Group. Welcome to the podcast, Ryan.
Thank you very much, Sean. I'm happy to be here.
I was very careful then. I didn't want to make a mistake with your name. I get my name stuffed up all the time. There's a local suburb here that's Frankston, and I had to mind my T's, but it's Frankson, and that is your Twitter handle as well, Ryan Frankson. So we'll get that off the top.
Yes, sir. Yeah, I actually have some friends who live in Melbourne, and they told me about that suburb, so I was fully prepared for it.
Well, there you go. So the only thing I'll do now is correct you. It's Melbourne. There's no. You just dropped the R completely. So we live in Melbourne.
Melbourne.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Now you're speaking Australian. So I want to talk to you. You've just finished up the Oilers season. You had a first round win against San Jose and then a game 7 loss to the Ducks. But it's been a while. 2006 was the last time you made the playoffs, and you've been with the Oilers since 2010. Take us behind the scenes, both from a team point of view and also how the fans reacted to being in the playoffs.
Yeah, as you mentioned, it'd been quite a while, 2006. I remember just being a young 20-year-old at the time. But yeah, so obviously a lot of buildup over the last many seasons of missing the playoffs and having to go through some heartbreak and some tough times. So that buildup, we definitely knew that it was going to be kind of a explosion of excitement in the city. And I think it definitely lived up to that and more. The fans were just nuts. And it coincided with the first year in our new building. So it was just kind of a perfect storm of excitement. And the fans really were amazing to see. And obviously that led to some huge engagement on social and just obviously numbers and content that we'd never seen before, having not been there.
And so was there a particular, because you sort of, it does go to another level from an engagement point of view and the fans posting and that kind of thing. Was there any particular types of content that you did a little bit differently in the playoffs, or did you just sort of double down on the stuff that had been working throughout the season? Was there anything that you sort of did differently in the playoffs?
I think a little bit of both of what you just said there. We did a lot of live streaming, whether it was on YouTube, on Facebook Live, on our website over the course of the season. And we upped that a little bit even more during the postseason. But just with the passion that our fans were showing, just we share a lot of UGC to begin with, but just creating actual like online, constantly updating collages and carousels of everything our fans are doing, decorating their houses, their cars, their offices, all that, just really, really trying to latch on to and embrace as much of that as we can.
So for those, and again, I'm pretty sure most of my listeners know what UGC is, but user-generated content. So the fans were sharing on multiple platforms, either decorating their houses, painting their faces, heading into the game, and you really went, well, this outpouring of emotion is our fans being super excited because we're in the playoffs, and you just went, we're going to flip that back and make sure, and I guess reaffirm it for your fans to say, keep sharing it. We'll keep sharing the best stuff. We're all in this together.
Absolutely. Kind of a we see what you're doing and we love it type of thing. We actually had, it's kind of interesting, we had two kind of main themes, overarching hashtags for our playoffs. One was just dedicated to the fans, and that was our hashtag Orange Crush, which is kind of what we called the big following, the big surge of fans and excitement. And then just our kind of in-game hockey hashtag, which was our overarching theme for the playoffs, which was just straight up, let's go Oilers, because that's kind of the chant that you hear in our building.
I love the different hashtags, especially around marketing campaigns or naming things, but sometimes the simplest hashtags are the ones that fans are yelling. Like, let's go Oilers is just, that's what they're yelling. So it makes sense. That's the rallying cry. And sometimes I think there's a little bit of, I guess, people trying to be too cute or, you know, people trying to shoehorn a marketing slogan in to say this is what it is, when sometimes, you know, and a lot of times when I've worked with teams, and this is, again, back in the day when people are saying, what should our hashtag be? Like, the easiest one is, what are they yelling out? That's a good hashtag.
Yeah, exactly. I couldn't agree more with you. I find that hashtags are often complicated too much, both in our sports world and kind of in the greater social sphere. So just to, like, you've talked about the slots. It's kind of the, so that's what social is for. That's like, it's the rallying cry of the team. And that, just to kind of encapsulate that in hashtag, is, seems like a good fit.
That's good. That's good. So the second thing is, and you know, as the playoffs approach and, you know, the pressure on the ice rises, it also rises off the field. And so my second question is, did you enjoy the experience?
I did. Our leadership, all of our executives, they made a very big point of saying, make sure you take some time to soak this in and enjoy it. And definitely, I found the biggest time to kind of soak that in and enjoy the atmosphere without having to be distracted by posting something was during the national anthems, which we've become pretty renowned for having some epic anthems. And that was really a time that I was able to soak it in. One really cool thing that our game press folks did is we actually put our anthem singer in the middle of the crowd amidst the Orange Crush, as it were called. And he actually sang the anthem from the middle of our crowd, not on the ice, not on a carpet, right in the middle of the stands, which was really cool. And we obviously captured all that and shared it with the world.
Yeah, because there's that pressure of, hey, it's playoffs. Obviously, I have to do more. And to a certain degree, when you're in those bigger games, because there's so much noise, because you've got more media coverage, more partners, they're all reporting on it and showing different points. So the pressure of doing more is not that. It's just like doing the right content at the right time and giving your point of view. So it's sort of, there is that time to take a breath, because no one's waiting on you to tweet that there was a goal. No one's waiting on a quick highlight, because you know as soon as you put it up, it's going to go, you know, the fans are going to rally behind it anyway. So it's sort of advice, you know, and I've advised a few people sort of either running their digital teams or on the accounts during big games, whether it be grand finals or big playoff games. It's like, this is why you work in sports. If you don't, you know, if you get super stressed of, I've got to do the killer tweet or the killer post or the best Instagram you've ever seen, it's like, that's the reason you're in sports. And if you lose all the benefit, then, you know, why did you do all those long hours? So I think it's really important to take a few of those moments for you, because that's what all the hard work's for.
I couldn't agree more. And it's hard to, you want to channel the fans' emotion as much as you can. So you kind of have to take it in a bit too, to kind of really get their vibe.
Yeah. And I think, you know, and I think it leads into, you know, Facebook. It's always that, oh, we've got to put, you know, we've got to put up the post that, hey, we won this game or we won this round. And yes, you do. And, you know, speed does win in the internet. But also when you've got the club account, when you put up that post that says, you know, we're through to the next round, the fans can't like it until you post it. So take your time, take a breath, get it right, put it up. They're still going to like it. Even if you are behind ESPN or Fox Sports or the local news, they don't have the ties that they do with, you know, with the Oilers. You know, so that's the piece where it's like, you know, the pressure to be first and get it out is really high, and it becomes higher in the playoffs. But you should still make it, you know, do all the checks, make sure it's spot on, and it'll hit the mark and go higher. So it's always my advice just to take a breath. And, you know, first, it doesn't have to, you don't have to rush it out.
Yeah, A, because the fan will obviously have the most passion and connection to your brand, your post. And B, you can probably give them something that they can't get anywhere else either.
Exactly. Wanted to dive in a little bit on, you were talking there before about your use of Facebook Live and sort of what type of, because there is a bit of pressure of, you know, and we talk to our friends at Facebook like Jacob and Kevin Cote and those kind of guys that say, live is the way to go, guys. This is, you know, live is what we're pushing. And when you hear that, you know, that's effectively Facebook saying, hey, we're pulling back the velvet rope, but you want to reach more of your fans, live works. How do you make sure that live is hitting the mark and you're not just doing live to say, hey, we ticked the box and we're doing live? Is there particular types of Facebook Live content that were working really well that gave, again, your unique point of view that traditional media outlets can't give?
Yeah, I think it was more like we definitely shared a few kind of exclusive looks and whatnot, but just being, we kind of put our bit more of our news hats on there and kind of broadcasted the stuff that I don't think a lot of the outlets were doing live. Like we would go live after, on every game day, the team will have a morning skate, yep, is what they call it. So we would go live immediately after. But kind of we'd catch the kind of the tail end of the guys on the ice, and then we would stay live right into the locker room with the guys talking and the coach talking. And then after the game, we actually produced more of a kind of a formal live show rather than, yep, just doing raw interviews like we would during the season. We upped our game a bit for the playoffs and had a host, had some guests, had some kind of segments, and just more of a produced package for our fans to enjoy that really they wouldn't get anywhere else.
Yeah, and I think that's where it evolves, because I think the first Facebook Lives were, you know, hey, we're taking a shot at training and we're going live and the fans get to watch and consume a piece of content that they don't normally get access to. But then, yeah, upping your game and, you know, doing those post-game shows or pre-game shows or live look-ins to, you know, to fan zones and stuff like that, that's the stuff that fans want to go, oh, I want to either dive in or I want to be a part of. That's where Facebook Live works, and I think that's how it's starting to evolve.
And what was really cool, because we weren't obviously we can't live stream games on Facebook on our website, but that the exception to that would be early in preseason when it's still rookie camp and there's no broadcast rights for that. So we live streamed 4 complete games during our rookie camp. There's a rookie tournament that a few of the teams go to in British Columbia, and then we play the local university team in Edmonton, and we did all of those games on Facebook Live. So that was really, really cool for us to do, but I think a really cool opportunity for our fans to watch us play on a different platform, could be right on their phone or wherever.
And it is pretty much, yeah, you're looking around for all the rights that fall out of your, you know, your TV deals and the league deals that say you can and can't do. So yeah, and especially the preseason is awesome. You know, I spoke to the guys, you know, speak to guys at MLB and all of their spring training content has just gone bananas because the fans are just hanging out for the season to start. And yeah, so if you can put something of, you know, preseason games or anything, they're like, because it's not yet in the media cycle to be reporting on it. So it's a really prime spot for teams to point their point of difference and sort of go from there. Wanted to go back to the opening of the new stadium, Rogers Place, and, you know, just how that's effectively added a whole new layer to what you're producing from a, you know, season coverage point of view. What were some of the things you did this this season around the new arena?
Yeah, absolutely. In years past, we were merely a tenant at the old Coliseum in Edmonton, but yep. we struck a deal with the city and to make this beautiful downtown arena. The other one was kind of a bit out in the outskirts, a little bit kind of off the beaten path, but we brought it downtown, kind of to the epicenter of the city, get more people coming downtown and create that buzz again. So that kind of came to a culmination this past fall when we were playing our first season there, and we opened up with a bunch of concerts in September. So just adding that element, that whole extra portfolio of channels, and creating a following for not just hockey fans, but for music fans, for all the different events that come through there, which is very interesting because you're talking to different people at different times rather than talking to hockey fans all at once on the Oilers channels. So we built out Rogers Place followings, and we actually have a surrounding Ice District is its name. So we have a whole suite of platforms on there too. So it's kind of been in staggered a bit because the district itself isn't complete, just yep. minor parts yep. of it. So the previous year before September was just a big buildup of construction milestones and sharing different pieces being completed of the arena. And now we're kind of heading into that mode with the district. So we've built this really great mold with the arena and how we built up excitement about that. And now we're going to repeat it with a bunch of new buildings and plaza and all that good stuff.
And so all of those assets are under your team. So you sort of can produce yes. a little bit of a cohesive voice around, yeah, we know what the Oilers fans want, and there's not super pressure on the Oilers accounts to constantly be promoting the stadium because the stadium has that different, you know, it has a different customer service type feel, and you're doing that education piece of, you know, people are now going to a new part of Edmonton, so they need to know how to park and how to get to the games because they'd always done it a certain way. And so you're, you know, and it sort of gives you a few more accounts to spread that message over.
Yeah, exactly. We hired a community manager just for Rogers Place and Ice District this past summer. Yep. And boy, did that come in handy come fall, because I knew there would be an influx of those customer service type requests and messages that you just alluded to, but I think it was more than I even expected. So to have a body doing that for 50, 60% of his day on top of other content was huge for educating everyone in the city about this new facility and how to get the best experience out of it.
And I guess having multiple resources stops that. I mean, you would have done a lot this season, that hat swapping of, oh, now I'm in Oilers voice and tone and brand. Oh, now I'm in Rogers Place, because they're not exactly the same. And so it can be a bit of a, you know, switch, you know, swapping of streams every time you're jumping from one account to another account. So having that separation probably helps make that process a little easier.
Definitely. Yeah, for sure.
I want to talk about some of your players and how they've sort of brought, I guess, you more traffic, but more engagement with fans. First of all, you know, Connor McDavid, take us through some of the, I guess, what he's doing on his social channels and how you've sort of wove that in to what the Oilers are doing and sort of vice versa.
Yeah, this big whirlwind of the last 2 years, call it, that we've had of just steadily building of excitement around the team and the city here basically started the day that we won that draft lottery and had the opportunities to select Connor a month later or 2 months later at the 2015 draft. And he has been everything that we hoped he would be thus far in terms of his performance on the ice. And from my perspective, just drawing so many new eyes and fans to the Oilers. There are kids that they're Connor McDavid fans first, and then they become Oilers fans by watching him and learning more about our team and just creating this whole new legion of fans and followers. And yeah, obviously he's very popular on his accounts too, and he's got his own partners and try to provide any support for him that he needs. But he's got a pretty good team behind him too that kind of keeps all of his commitments organized. And I think he personally does a pretty good job of sharing some personal stuff that our fans just eat up to. So yeah, he's just helped create that massive buzz around our team that's kind of really giving us an opportunity to showcase everything we do digitally to a way bigger audience. It's really cool.
And I think more and more players are coming into the league with a bit more of that digital savviness
So they understand that, you know, if they build out a following, that there is commercial realities that, that come from that. So you're not in that space of, you know, again, 6-7 years ago, talking to a hardened hockey player to say, this is why you should be on these social platforms, when they're not understanding their platform. But you know, Connor McDavid's are coming in and they've been using these platforms since, you know, they were in their early teens. So they sort of have a bit more understanding of, I guess, the commercial realities as well, but also just how to use the platforms and why they might do it. So it does give you an advantage from a team point of view if you've got players that start getting understanding the platforms and putting out some good content, because it's just, again, rising tides lift all boats. If you've got a few players that are doing a great job, then it's a good overall for the team.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more. Yeah, and he does, like I said, he does a really good job of balancing his partner commitments too with kind of giving the fans the stuff that they want, just kind of a peek into his life, his friends, what he does in his spare time. So that's the way to do it.
So I've spoken to a couple of NBA teams that that have had Australian connections, like, you know, the Bucks and the Warriors when Andrew Bogut was there, and Cleveland Cavaliers and Milwaukee Bucks with Matthew Dellavedova, and they've seen that it's grown a massive fan base and more connection with the Australian fan base in terms of traffic and engagement and those kind of things. You have the same thing happening with Leon, and I'm going to try my best to get the name right. Dreisaitl, no. I haven't done it right,
have I? A little bit more emphasis on the first part in addition to the last part, Dreisaitl.
And building out, I guess, a connection with the Oilers in Germany. How's that been, one, what's that experience been like? And, you know, how many German fans are sort of coming into the digital cheer squad of the Oilers?
Yeah, it's been really cool. What we had a really big built-in Finnish following for a long time, because during our dynasty years, we had guys like Jari Kurri and Esa Tiikanen, just rock stars in Finland. So we've got a lot of Finnish Oilers fans. But with Leon Draisaitl becoming an emerging superstar in this league as well, right next to Connor, that German following, both for him, he's becoming a very big star in Germany, kind of like... They call him the hockey Dirk Nowitzki, the way that he's kind of becoming an ambassador for hockey, the way Dirk was for basketball, and just that notoriety, which is really cool.
You could not get a bigger compliment in Germany than to be called Dirk Nowitzki.
Yeah, exactly. So, and he's really, really proud German too. Our season finished after two rounds, as you mentioned, and so the world championships were already going on, and they were happening in his hometown of Cologne. And the guy has been playing hockey straight since the end of August. And he said, I'm keeping playing. My country needs me. So that was really cool to see him go over. And it was actually that week, more than anything, that we really saw a lot of German fans chatting with us. And because we were obviously posting updates about how he was doing with Germany. So that was really cool to see. And I can only imagine that they will get more engaged with Leon's development next season.
And so is there a goal around that engagement, you know, as you had with Finnish and now you've got with German fans? Is there a goal that you want them to be more engaged with the content? Is there a way, and I talked about this with Ted Johnson at the Timberwolves, with all of their work they're doing in China, is there a membership play or something sort of down the track that you say, well, these fans are really in, and like you said, they're being led in by the player, but then they sort of fall in love and they say, oh, the Oilers are my team, in the same way your Finnish fans have stuck. Is there something longer term that you sort of say, how can we engage that international market and those international fans?
That's a good question. I personally haven't put a whole lot of long-term thought into it. Right now, for me, it's more just kind of rewarding their engagement with some back and forth chatter and kind of giving them the love. But it's crazy to see where all the hockey fans pop up. We have a lot of Oilers fans in Australia, and we see some popping up in Brazil and Mexico. And so it's just for me, it's just really kind of take their content and show it to kind of our fans locally, like, look at so-and-so in Germany. He's just like you. He's got a car flag on his car. So for me, it's just more kind of a micro level right now, but I could definitely see it growing into more of a a larger strategic play in the future.
Well, that's the thing. You're in that space of, hey, I'm building the audience. You can come back and say, this is how many German, you know, how many fans from Germany are hitting our website. This is how many fans from Germany are engaged with our page. And then you get to make the decision. Well, what product or what offering? You know, it might be a T-shirt. It might be, you know, it might be a merchandise offer. It might be, you know, this digital membership type offer that you go, well, these fans are just, you know, insatiable in terms of the content. We keep pushing it out. They love it. You know, is there an option from a product point of view or an offer that they would double down on? And I think that's really the opportunity, I think, for a lot of the US sports to say, yes, we can do great in Canada and the US, but we're getting this attraction from all different parts of the world. Some of them will be player-based. Some of them will be because you're putting engagement into that space that there potentially is, you know, revenue opportunities down the track. So, you know, I guess it's the data will tell you whether the interest is there, and then you could do things like, you know, the Cleveland, speaking of Mike Connolly with the Cavaliers, they were doing Australian partnerships, activating back in Australia based on Matthew Dellavedova. And so it's sort of, you know, that's the opportunity because they said, we've got all these fans that are coming from Australia. He's got great brand recognition, and you can sort of do that kind of stuff. So I think there's more opportunities in that space, especially when you have, you know, an international star to anchor him around.
For sure. That's really cool. I think from a league level, they're really looking at China as a development area. I think the Canucks, Vancouver Canucks and the Los Angeles Kings are even playing a game there next year. So that'll be really, really cool to see how that comes about.
Oh, exactly. And the thing is, you know, the league overall will get more fans as a result. And then you can fight for every single one of those fans. There's not a regional basis to follow a team, you know, and, you know, Australia's a really good example, where you say, you don't have that regional bias to say, oh, well, I live in this town, so I must follow this team. Yep. You just get to pick the best team either on the ice or the way that they engage, or they do really great storytelling. So you get closer to the Conor McDavids and that of the world. And that's why people decide. So it's a, you know, that international, I guess, opportunity is that you can be, you know, you can be fighting right alongside the, you know, the Rangers and the Bruins and those kind of things, and they're not picking them because of a, you know, oh, because I live in Boston. It's just because I like hockey and I like the style of that team and the way that it's presented. So it's a real big opportunity for, you know, all pro sports, especially in the North American region.
Absolutely.
I wanted to talk to you about, speaking of sort of partner activations and stuff, I wanted to talk to you about Brick Best Seats. Do you want to take us through what you did there and I guess how the fans reacted and what you were looking to do with the partner?
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously, we have some major corporate partners. Hockey is king in Canada, so everyone wants to partner up with that. But then the big challenge is how do we create these activations and experiences for them to kind of do something cool outside the box and engage people with our brand and their brand at the same time. So my favorite one from the past year, and it's actually one that we've continued over for a couple of years, where before it was just a matter of doing a photo op in these furniture stores in and around Edmonton called The Brick.
Yep.
And getting our fans to go there and basically just take this photo, send it to us with the hashtag, kind of the usual spiel. But we took it a step further this year and brought it into our new arena. And we had four giant bobbleheads created of Connor, of our goalie Cam Talbot, and a couple more forwards, Milan Lucic and Ryan Nugent-Hopkins. And so we had two of these. I think they're about, I want to say 10 feet tall, maybe between 8 and 10. And so we had two of them at a time on the concourse each night. And in the Brick has a neighborhood on our main concourse, as we call it.
Yep.
Where it's all their activations, and that was their big thing. So all of our fans at the game would come and have this photo op with our massive bobblehead players, and they would send their photos to us, and we would toss it up on the big board and share it on our social channels, and then we would take the bobbleheads into the stores throughout the year too. So just took that one step further, and it was, I haven't seen too many of them around North America. Maybe a couple of ballparks have had the giant bobblehead. So that was really cool to see us bring them into our building and create that activation.
And what the bit I like about it, other than that, yes, that these bobbleheads, and we'll link to a couple of the posts from Brick Best Seats in the show notes. They are giant. Yeah, I think you're right. Unless the picture I'm looking at with 4 foot midgets, they're at least 8 to 10 feet. And it's not just a digital play. Like a Ninja One, you've extended something that has been successful, driving store traffic, right? The Brick, they still want to sell furniture, so you've got to get people into the store. But then you've tied, hey, we're activating in the stadium, but we want that activation to be amplified on the internet. So more people want to go, well, I want to come to the game. I want to get a picture with the giant bobblehead. That's why I'm going to go to the next piece. And it ties into the stadium piece. I think it's like the integration of all of those pieces and the complexity of that and, you know, all the moving parts that you guys have to coordinate. But that's what makes it work. Because if you just say, send in your photos and they, you know, and they only get caught in the digital realm and they don't get repurposed in stadium and that kind of thing, it only goes so far. Whereas if you say you're coming to the stadium, you're going around the corner where the Brick activation always is, you know, people are going to always be taking that photo. It makes it much easier for you and your commercial people when they go back into to the Brick and say, this is what we did. These are all the tweets that we got in. This is how many people saw it. This is how many people from a foot traffic point of view. Like there's so much rich data there that you can go back to them and say, hey, what a success this has been.
And for the folks who aren't fortunate enough to get to come to our building to see a game, it creates that kind of anticipation for us to announce, hey, we're bringing them to the store. Here's your chance to see them.
Completely.
Which creates, yeah, even more probably pleasure for the partner because they actually have the people in their store too, yeah. Which is great.
And that's the thing that like that is normally one of the tough, I guess, objectives. If a sponsor says, oh, yeah, I'm doing all of this sponsorship, you know, with the Oilers, but I want people to come to my store. And, you know, it's easy to activate at the game and it's easy to do digital competition, but it's like, it's still, you know, you still have to do a lot of hard work to get people into a store. And, you know, you can't just say, oh, we're going to send out a player 3 times or 4 times because that's only going to give you the spike. So, yeah, I love the way, yeah, that you've taken these giant bobbleheads and getting them to, getting the tour around. It's a you know, great way to, yeah, get that store traffic is always, it's a bit of a one that's really tough to do. And it's, you know, if you can get them into the store, that's a huge win. So that's why, I love that campaign.
Likewise.
You've been at you've been at Edmonton since 2010. Do you want to take us a little bit through your backstory, how you started and to where you are now?
Yeah, for sure. It was kind of as I was going up through high school, trying to figure out what school I want to go to, what I want to study. I kind of landed on, yeah, I think it'd be pretty cool to write about sports and follow a sports team around. So I think it was kind of my dream to be a beat writer for a hockey team or a MLB team or something like that.
Yep.
So I went to a journalism program at a university in Edmonton called Grant MacEwan University, and took the journalism program there and worked for a couple of local papers, kind of suburban type twice weekly publications, and did the whole sports editor, shooter, production manager type of jack of all trades type of situation there, and enjoyed that, but started to get more interested in the communications and PR side. And basically if you want to work for kind of the big show in Edmonton, you try to get in with Oilers and Oilers Entertainment Group. And we actually own the junior team, not a direct affiliate, but kind of a team that we might have draft picks on.
Yep.
But other teams would have draft picks on as well. So not a direct affiliate, but junior level. So that was actually my start. I got hired in 2010 as the general communications guy for that team. And we actually had an independent league baseball team at the time too, that we don't anymore, unfortunately. But, so I was doing communications for those two teams. And that was kind of right around the time that, social became very, very mainstream in terms of the sports world. So creating the portfolios for those two teams I was working on, I was loving that. And then it was just kind of right place, right time the following summer, 2011, that we on the Oilers side decided to dedicate a full-time position to do social for the hockey team. And I had so much experience doing it for the other two teams last year that I put my name in and got on, and it's been kind of a wild ride ever since, building those platforms and having new platforms come along and having to kind of learn them. And it's been really a lot of fun engaging with our fans who are very, very passionate.
So very much a case of getting in, getting your hands dirty in all the platforms, figuring out how to use them. And then when they went, oh, we need someone to do this, oh, Ryan already knows all this stuff. Very much that case.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think having that that editorial background, going through journalism, working for newspapers, that helps a lot too. Obviously, composing posts, literally, and the photo side, and just kind of all components of all the necessary social tools. Having that was really, really beneficial for me. Just kind of a perfect storm of skill set.
Yep. And I think that especially from early on, and I still think it applies, that being that jack of all trades, to being able to pick up a camera and take a good shot, be able to write some copy, you know, those kind of things, being able, you know, not being afraid to, if you need to step in front of a camera, those kind of things, you know, they're just essential, because it doesn't matter what size of the sports team is, you stretch for resources. Everyone's stretched for resources. So you need to be able to have people that can adapt and have no problems taking on any role that gets thrown at them.
Yeah, our digital crew is pretty great for that. We're pretty lucky. And I mean, you don't know which one that you might end up loving, so you may as well dabble them all. And then when you do gather that experience and it is time to specialize a little bit more, you know which one you love.
And the thing is also that specialized, that Asian aspect, is you've got to use the product to understand it. So when, you know, Instagram throws in Instagram stories and live, and Snapchat does different things, and Facebook rolls out different things, like we are getting to the point where someone will say, oh, what I do well is I do Instagram stories or Snapchat stories really well, because I know how to piece them together. I know how to use all the tricks of the trade to make it look cool. You only do that by, you know, getting reps, yeah, by just doing a lot of posts, whether it's your own personal one or if you're lucky enough to do it on a team. You know, it's just a game of repetition. You've just got to do the reps to be able to build up your skill set in that space.
And it still feels silly to say, like, oh, I'm an expert at doing Instagram stories, but that's literally that's the world that we're in right now. And there's that many people on those platforms that is a very big skill for sure.
Yeah, yeah. And I think my advice to people who say, I want to get in, I want to do this, is like, you've got to start being the best at some of those things. Because, yeah, we will start seeing, you know, the Oilers are, you know, advertising for a Snapchat game day producer. That wasn't even a thing 18 months ago. But now it's becoming something.
Yeah, I think I saw, probably right before the NFL season started, I saw some job posting. It was literally for Snapchat producer for the NFL. Like, yeah, that much of a specialization in one platform, albeit, like, and that new of a platform too, to have that demand for that is amazing.
Yeah, so I think that's, you know, always diving into that new technology. You don't know which one's gonna go and grow, but you know there definitely will be those opportunities for the ones that have become super hot for an opportunity. Any other advice for potential up and comers trying to enter into the sports biz world?
The one that I always say is no internship or no job experience is too small or too petty to kind of sink your teeth into. It's all about, like you said, getting your hands dirty. And especially in sports, experience is really key, and it's really tough to get experience because there are only a handful of sports teams locally. So to be able to, even if it is volunteer type of stuff, just to have that base and keep growing from there, that's how you kind of get in with an OEG or our CFL team in town.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it is good advice. And, you know, there still is opportunity because, again, that resource squeeze is happening, that you might drive the Instagram account for a day or you know, an event. And that's where, you know, from a senior level and the exec sort of driving things like yourself, that's where it becomes, rather than being on the tools, which you have been on for many years, now you're in the case of, you're briefing someone for the tool. You're saying, oh, okay, this is our Instagram story today. This is the kind of things we want. This is the kind of tone we want. And so you're not doing it, but now the skill is also briefing when you're handing over the phone to say, this is what we want from Instagram today. you know, we want to get a bit of the morning skate. We want to get a few grabs here. We want a few shots of the stadium and people walking in. And so you can sort of frame that whole story.
Yeah, and the NHL actually did a great job of opening up a few of those positions for kind of up-and-comers, students with their real-time correspondent program that Major League Baseball has been doing for a long time. Now that us as a league has partnered with Major League Baseball Advanced Media, the NHL yep. took that RTC program and they used it for this season. So we had a couple of game night social media producers who you'd mostly cater to the away team because they yep. wouldn't have the resources there. But that was super valuable to me when our team is on the road and I wasn't at that particular road trip to have those people to lean on. And one of the girls that did it for us this season, she's volunteering with one of the junior football teams this summer just to kind of build that base. So it's a perfect example of just little ways that you can kind of keep getting feet in the door and hands-on experience.
One just to finish off this sort of intern discussion, I saw a really interesting activation done by the New Zealand All Blacks. So they're the one of the best rugby teams in the world. And they did a activation with Air New Zealand, and it was in the paper of all things. I know I do occasionally read a paper; I'm not completely digital all the time. And effectively, it was a fan campaign to get fan reporters in that were going to produce content around some of the the game day activities. So it was a really fun and different mashup of, hey guys, we need more help. But they did it with a partner. Now, it did involve the whole of the country, and Air New Zealand would fly them in. So it was, there was a competition, that kind of thing. But they were going to run them through the same sort of, I guess, screening process that they would if they went to hire the person. So it's a different take. I hadn't seen too many teams say, hey, well, let's make this a sponsorship opportunity and a partnership opportunity and then see, what comes of it. So I thought it was a really unique way of sort of tackling that problem of resourcing, but also, getting that fan point of view.
Yeah, you see it from time to time with junior reporters from more of a traditional media perspective, but that kind of takes it to a digital level and even just having more people producing content in your venue, the more perspectives, the richer it is, for sure.
Yeah, and the thing is, for those kind of things, sometimes people say, I'm not handing over the keys to the account to someone I haven't just, I've just met or has won a fan competition. You're not actually doing that. You're just getting to collect a lot of content and you just get to pick the best, the best of what they do. And, they take 500 shots. Only one of them needs to be good for you to post. And that's pretty much the game we live in every single day. Take lots of shots and hopefully you get that one that really hits the mark.
Yep, no kidding.
I want to finish off with the Sports Geek Closing Five. Do you remember the first sports event you ever attended?
Obviously attended Oilers hockey games and Edmonton Eskimos Canadian football games locally. But the one that really stands out for me for more of a wow factor away from Edmonton was my family took a trip down to Seattle. So I was a huge baseball fan as a kid, obviously still am.
Yep.
But just got to see the Seattle Mariners and Cleveland Indians. And it was one of Alex Rodriguez's first years with the Mariners. And I followed his career all the way through. I'm a big Yankees fan. So when he came to New York, I was quite tickled about that. So that was definitely my first big time sporting event that I remember.
Terrific. And do you have a favorite food that you've eaten at a sports event or a favorite food memory?
I think my go-to now, most of my leisure sporting events are ball games.
Yep.
Because obviously if I'm at a hockey game, I'm usually working.
Yep.
But so my go-to is to try to find the best, most kind of complex nachos I can find.
Yep.
I've had some really good pulled pork nachos, hot chicken nachos at, I want to say... where were the hot chicken ones? I'm not sure, but they were. That's what I stake out.
Terrific. Yeah, it's nothing like nachos, cheese sauce going everywhere. It's messy, but it doesn't matter. It's allowed at a ballpark.
Exactly. Get messy.
What's the first app you open in the morning?
I think I have to still say Twitter for that, just because it is kind of it's still and will likely always be the top news platform for breaking news, particularly in sports. If there's, because I'm out west in Canada, so a lot of the big centers for hockey news, whether it's New York or Toronto, like a lot of that stuff will happen at say 8 o'clock or 9 o'clock their time, and I'm a couple hours behind. So get up in the morning, open Twitter, kind of catch up on what's going on out east, and then get ready for what's going on in my world.
Terrific. Would you have any nominations, either people you work with or people you follow, read, that they should follow and read and check out?
Yeah, I think I'll give some Canadianity love for hopefully the folks who want to get a little bit more into Canadian sports and culture that are listening to this this podcast. Couple of guys, Jonathan Torrens and Jeremy Taggart, they do a podcast called Taggart and Torrens. Jeremy was the drummer for a band called Our Lady Peace, and Jonathan is an actor who's been in a bunch of good stuff. And they do a weekly podcast talking about music and sports and movies, and it's all kind of Canadianity is what they call it. So I really like listening to them and following them on Twitter. It's at Jonathan Torrens is the one guy, and at Taggart7 is Jeremy Taggart. And another guy I like to follow who also dabbles in mostly sports but goes into movies and music a bit too is a fellow named I don't even know how to pronounce his last name, but his handle is PD Beats. Do you know him?
Yes, I do. Yes. Rumelitis, I think his last name is.
Yeah, he does some really cool stuff. Gets a lot of junior hockey players, a lot of actors, and then they all talk about the different areas too, in addition to their area of specialty. So he puts out a lot of good stuff. So those are my Canadianity follows.
I love that word. I've never heard Canadianity. Yeah. I obviously, because I can't say it. Canadianity. Yeah, I will try again. I will try to get it by the time I finish the podcast. What is your social media platform that is your MVP? And you can answer this either with your Oilers hat on, or with your as a personal preference, or you can give both answers.
Okay, cool. We'll start with Oilers hat. As I mentioned, Twitter is still where we break all of our news, but in terms of an MVP, as we've talked about a little bit, I'm going to go with Facebook just because of the live stream capability. Like all the platforms are live stream capable now, but just the reach that Facebook is, as you talked about, kind of behind the velvet curtain or the velvet rope or whatever, they're really rewarding that. So just seeing the number of video views and the reach that some of these live videos have, and that has been really probably our biggest success story socially from the last season, was that those Facebook Live activations, how many people we've reached. So
yep.
I have to say Facebook there.
And personally?
Personally, I don't even use Facebook anymore that much. Just kind of cruise around a little bit, don't post too much. I think I'm most active on Instagram now. Big Instagram stories guy. Both posting, and then it's just so easy to toggle through all your buddies and just see what everyone's up to. So I think Instagram will be my MVP personally.
Instagram is quite up there in the personal MVP rankings. I think it is a little bit of, I've done a lot today, I just want to turn my brain off and see and pretty pictures and quirky stories. Yeah. I think that's sort of why a lot of people are, and it's also why the growth is. It's not just a sports business executives that are saying, hey, this is why I'm on Instagram. So that seems to be where the growth is, because people are just like, it's very easy to just scroll through, see pretty things, double tap them, and then, you know, check in with friends, or, you know, follow the crazy antics of celebrities and other athletes. So I think it's a good way to go.
Yep, totally.
So, Ryan, where can people connect with you on the internet? What's the best way?
You shouted out my Twitter earlier. It's just my full name, no periods or underscores or anything. So at Ryan Frankson, same Instagram handle, and then obviously where I'm posting most of my stuff throughout the day is all over the Edmonton Oilers official pages, and then my team is all over the Rogers Place and Ice District channels. So that's basically my world in a nutshell.
Well, terrific. Thank you very much for coming on the pod. We did discuss it last time we caught up in Vegas, so I'm glad we finally got to organize it, and look forward to catching up soon and potentially coming down and coming over and checking out a game at some point. I'm trying to tick off as many stadiums as possible, and I really need to lift my game in the NHL space and how many stadiums I've been to. So I'll have to come to Edmonton.
Saw your most recent North American tour. You definitely gotta get some hockey in there too.
Definitely. What did I do in my last one? I went to the Wild, game and a Kings game. I think was my my hockey quota for the trip. But yes, it is something that like NHL on TV and NHL Live is, you know, it's such a vastly different experience. I love the NHL Live. So. Because it's just a completely different game. The TV does not do it justice to what it's like at the game. So more than happy to see more games.
And we would be more than happy to have you.
All right. Thanks, mate.
Thank you.
Sign up for Sports Geek News at sportsgeekhq.com/signup now.
Thanks again to Ryan Frankston from the Edmonton Oilers. You can send him a tweet. Much like myself, his Twitter handle is his name, Ryan Frankson. Please send him a tweet telling him that you've listened in and you like some of the stuff that he's done. Isn't that giant bobbleheads idea just an awesome idea? And as you've heard from me before, steal with pride. Adapt it, make it yours, put your own twist in it, work on it with your own sponsors. That's how this whole business grows, by us sharing best practice and leveraging it best for our team and the results. As I mentioned at the top of the show, I mentioned the Lego car. For those of you who haven't seen me or tell the story about the Lego car, again, Google Lego car. I was part of a really cool project where I put in $500 and we helped a young man from Romania, Raul Aida, build a car. And Steve Sammartino was the guy that pulled it all together. Steve's second book, Lessons That School Forgot, is currently out. It's available in Amazon if you look up Steve Sammartino. But I'm helping him with his second book and his launch and getting it out there. So if you are in Melbourne on the June 20th, I'd love to see you there at the book launch. Go to stevesammartino.com. All the links for the book launch, all the links to find the book on Amazon will be there. I will be handing out the book to my good friends because it's a roadmap for the next 15 years on where your job may come and how you can protect yourself as either an entrepreneur or just someone working in the business. Steve is a very smart man. Sam Rizzi is known to me. I'd love to see you at the book launch, and I wholeheartedly endorse Sam's book. I think I read about a third of it sitting in the airport lounge the last weekend. It's a terrific read, easy to read, and lots of lessons in it. So check out stevesammartino.com for more about the book and the book launch. Also want to discuss, as I discussed before the interview with Ryan, been really excited building out the Sports Geek Campaigns game plan with Lenny Go from Tradable Bits. You would know Lenny from our South by Southwest recap, episode 142. So please go to sportsgeekcampaigns.com for more info, and just to register your interest. We're looking to do it with a few select launch teams. So sign up and get some more information. And what do I mean by the game plan? Because it's not just a straight, hey, here's a product. Because I've found over time that there's definitely issues around resourcing. There's definitely resource issues around how commercial and partnership teams go about selling digital and digital campaigns and digital content. And there's a real gap in that space around how do we value it? How do we put this whole piece together? So the game plan is for me, and this is the X factor, the change in approach, is to for me to work with your commercial and partnership teams to help them build out attractive campaigns and campaign pitches for specific sponsors. And it'll be integrated, the campaign itself will be integrated with digital and social content. So you can add videos, you can add social posts, and I will help them both build that pitch, but also value that pitch. They can say, here's the campaign, we're going to guarantee you this reach, you're going to get these many Twitter posts, you're going to get this many Instagrams, you're going to get a Facebook video. And again, and it starts building out a more fully functional, integrated digital offering. And so you can put a number against that that says, here's the value. You go into it with fixed known costs. You know that you're going to spend X on the specific campaign, and there's a rate card based on the different types of campaigns on how easy or complex they may be. So as an example, you can sell your campaigns from anywhere to 15K to 40K. The value will be around 25 to 40K to the sponsor. So it's all about testing the water on what the sponsor is willing to pay, and also what the sponsor is paying in market. That's the real key one. What are sponsors paying in market? What would a sponsor pay to get a mini site developed that captures data, that engages fans, that gets them to go into store or drives them leads? That's one of the pieces of the puzzle here. And you've got your fixed costs between $7,000 and $10,000, depending on the type of campaign that you're doing. So it results in $8,000 to $30,000 in profit each time you run a campaign. And all the campaign execution, the graphics, the support, the data collection, the reporting is all handled externally. There's no internal resources required. So you're not bringing in a tool and then not having anyone to be able to service that tool to be able to build out campaigns. That's the piece where we take completely off your hands. And so all it leaves is your commercial team to sell these campaigns with integrated content. And then you guys can just simply sit back and collect the profits every time one of the campaigns are done. And also you'll start seeing that digital revenue, as I sort of spoke about with Ted Johnson, you can start attributing some of all of that revenue to the digital team. So it moves the digital team away from a cost center on the budget board to a profit center, which is important. So please go to sportsgeekcampaigns.com, or just send me an email, sean@sportsgeekhq.com. So that's sportsgeekcampaigns.com. There'll be a link also on sportsgeekhq.com that will be live that you can go to from there. But sportsgeekcampaigns.com is where you need to go after you finish this run or this commute. If you are running, run a little bit harder. And just put me down as a personal motivation and trainer as well. You can give me a plus on that on LinkedIn. We are getting very close to the 150th episode of the Sports Geek Podcast. And what I would like to do, this is my ask for the podcast, is I want 150 iTunes reviews worldwide. We aren't that far away. We are 36 short around the world. So if you haven't left a review, I'm eternally grateful. Very much thankful for the people who have left a review. If you haven't, if you've been listening to the podcast, if you've listened to more than five, I would love it if you would spare 2 minutes and go to sportsgeekhq.com/iTunes. That will direct you straight to the iTunes store. Jump into the app, leave a review, leave your name. It would be good if you left your name, then I know who it is. But yeah, I want to get to 150. So if you can help me out, that would be terrific. But until next episode, my name is Sean Callanan, and you've been listening to the Sports Geek Podcast.
Like the Sports Geek Podcast? Find us on Facebook.com/SportsGeek. Check out which teams work with Sports Geek at SportsGeekHQ.com/clients. Please leave a review on iTunes. Go to sportsgeekhq.com/iTunes. Thanks for listening to the Sports Geek Podcast.